You've been here before this morning. You know exactly where we're going to go today, right? It's my practice. It's always been my practice to preach through books for a lot of reasons. But one of the main ones is this, is it forces us to keep things in context. So we can't make the Bible say things it really doesn't say about particular things it really doesn't even imply. In essence, what I'm saying here is I preach through books for a lot of reasons, but one of those is to protect you from me. From me just pushing my own agendas and my own thoughts and all those things on you. In its essence, in a sense, to protect me from myself. Context means everything. We are in the Sermon on the Mount in chapter, we're going to be starting chapter 6 this morning. We finished up chapter 5 last week. And just remember all those things we've talked about, those Beatitudes and Jesus' admonition to be salt and light and always help people to see that their understanding of the law of God is very shallow, that murder means more than literally killing someone. It means being angry with them. And adultery is committed when we just have lust, even though we don't act upon it. We're going to be looking at just the first four verses here in chapter 6. Beware of practicing your righteousness before men to be noticed by them. Otherwise, you have no reward with your Father who is in heaven. When therefore you give alms, do not sound a trumpet before you, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may be honored by men. Truly, I say to you, they have their reward in full. But when you give alms, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, that your alms may be in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will repay you. The gospel is a very amazing thing, and one of the things you may not have given too much thought about is this, is that it frees us from all kinds of things. And one of the things it frees us from is this, is having to impress other people. But I want to challenge us with the idea this morning, too. It also frees us from the prison of believing that we have to impress God. Because I start to say, wait, this morning saying this, that you don't impress God. You don't impress God. You might as well just realize it. You're not here because you impress God. None of us. People can do some very impressive things at times. And I know you've seen some of those things. Maybe you've done some really impressive things in your own time. Things that impressed other people. Saw a video this week, and it had to do, and it was about this guy. He holds the world's record. He holds like 50 or 18 records in regard to quick draw shooting. On this video, this guy did this. He demonstrated his skill, because what he did was he drew and he shot two balloons, reholstered his weapon, and he did it all within 0.02 seconds. Now that's impressive. Can you imagine? When we were in Washington a few years ago, we went to they have a logging kind of exhibition thing that they do every year in the place where Matthew used to live, and it's really kind of neat because the loggers come and have contests chopping logs in half and sawing things and all of that. But they also had a strong man contest, and there was a little slight woman about the size of Sonia Chastain that picked up 400 pounds and carried it 50 feet. Now that was impressive. Sometimes, guys, we're way too easily impressed with other people. What Jesus is saying here is this. He's using an example. You know, when he talks, he doesn't just bring stuff out of thin air. The things he's saying relate to the people that are listening to what he has to say. They are familiar with hypocrites. They are familiar of scribes and Pharisees who literally do walk down the street blowing a trumpet anytime they're giving money to people because they want everybody else to take notice of it and be impressed with them. See, they're legalists. They believe it's by their actions, by their own doing, that they're made right with God. He's questioning not what they're doing, he's questioning their motive for doing it. If you've been around here very long, you've heard me say this over and over again. When it comes to God, the reason why you do things is just as important as the actual doing of those things. See, the very root of legalism, and I want to challenge you with this idea this morning if you've never heard this before, and that is Christianity is distinctly different from every other religion in two aspects. One of those is the only religion that says you can have a loving, intimate, close relationship with God. The other thing is this. Is every other religion teaches you that you are made right with God by impressing God. By keeping a particular set of rules. And depending on what religion you're talking about, it's just the different rules. The rule book changes. But the fundamental error is the same thing. And that is by keeping the rules, the regulations, you are able to make yourself right before God. And let me tell you something this morning. The gospel screams this, no, 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 no. That you will never keep the rules well enough. That every one of us in this room and every person except for Jesus has ever breathed breath fails. Legalists believe this. They believe that they not only impress God with their activities, they also obligate God to reward them because they do. In other words, in a sense, they put God in debt to them to reward them because of the good things that they've done. To reward them in particular here because they've given to the needy. Let me tell you guys, Christianity says a lot of things, but one of them says this, and that is you might impress other people at times, but you don't impress God at all. A few years ago, I was riding somewhere on a Saturday morning. I think it was a Saturday morning, and Matthew was with me and probably Lindsay. And we went by the Kingdom Hall down the street here. And let me tell you, there must have been 300 people. There must have been 300 cars. Place looked like an anthill. They were having their spring work day. One of the kids said to me, Daddy, how come we don't have so many people come to our work day? And I was able, you know, very often, you know, you can't think of anything to say when you have these opportunities to share some wisdom with your kids, but it hit me, and that is you need to understand some things, kids. And one of them is this, is these people are here today because they believe they're winning brownie points before God. That they're impressing God with their actions. They're impressing God with their activities. They're obligating Him to reward them. Why do you think we use an offering box here and we don't pass the plate? Some of you may have never been here before and we just skip right through that. We forgot to pass the plate this morning. How could we possibly do that? Well, some of you may think that it's kind of a PCA thing, that in PCA churches they don't pass the plate, they have offering boxes. But let me tell you something, you'd be hard-pressed to find very many PCA churches that don't pass the plate. One of the reasons we do it is this, is because it's the biblical way of doing it. I mean, if you look at the Bible, that's how they took offerings. They used a box. The primary reason is this, is to protect us from trying to impress one another in our giving in the worship service on Sunday mornings. You've been there before, right? You see the plate. You feel awkward. Should I give something? Should I not give something? Should I give this much? Should I not give that much? It goes on in us. I know it does. Let me tell you a story. When I was a deacon, this was years ago, I was a deacon. One Sunday morning, the deacons counted the money in this particular church I was at. And so we were counting the money, and there was a wad of bills about that big around with a rubber band around it, and there was a $20 bill on the outside, and we're going, man, this is going to be a good one here. There's a $20 bill on the outside and a bunch of ones in the inside. You know what I'm saying here, and that is sometimes people, and we don't want to put people in a position where they feel like they have to do something like that to impress other people because they're putting money in the pot. Because if that's our mindset, then we're not really honoring God in it at all, right? How many times have you put money into a plate when you really didn't want to do it, but you felt like you had to? Because people were watching what you were doing. The thing that really pushed me in this direction was this, and the deacons here too, is one Sunday morning when the church was young, and we used to pass a plate and take up the offering just like most other churches do. And there was a young couple that was there, and the offering time came, and the plate started coming down the aisle, and all of a sudden she goes into a panic, and she starts digging through her purse to pull out her checkbook so she can write a check. And the sad thing is everybody in the church was watching her do it. And I'm thinking, this is not honoring to God. We need to take people out of this formula. This needs to be, when people give to the church, when people give their money to God, it needs to be done in a way that they do it with joy, that they're compelled to do it. Not that they feel like they have to do it for the wrong reasons. Strangely, I think the church very often, and nonprofits are very often guilty of doing things that encourage people to give so that other people will acknowledge them and recognize their great giving. How many times have you seen a newsletter from a nonprofit, like maybe Covenant Children's Home would be maybe an example, or from a church or from a ministry kind of thing, that there's not at least a section in there where it lists the names of particular people who have given exceptional donations that particular month? Why would we do that? Are we putting people in this position where they're trying to impress people by the money they give because their name's going to wind up in the bulletin or the newsletter and people are going to think highly of them because of their great generosity? When are we ever going to get over ourselves? It's not about us. It just isn't. Understand that unbelievers are in a prison. You were in a prison before you became a believer. Jesus has taken and unlocked the door for you to walk out of that prison. And let me tell you, the biggest part of that prison is self. Selfishness, self-concern, self-interest, self-motivation, self, 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 self. Self-righteousness.
what he has done. He's done many things, but one of the things he's done is this, is he's set us free that we can freely love God and love other people. We must always take care to not do anything that we do for the purpose of impressing other people. And please don't have the idea that things that you do are going to impress God. And we need to be careful about not giving people opportunities to do that very thing. When you give alms, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. What is with that? Is he saying we're supposed to be schizophrenic or something? How in the world can we do something like that? You know what? I think the main thing here, the point he's making here is this, is try not to impress yourself. Don't be impressed with yourself in what you do. James Garfield, you know, one of the presidents of the United States back in the 1800s, probably a lot of people. Do you know much about Garfield? When I say president, is the first name that pops into your head? Garfield? Evidently, James Garfield was a brilliant man. They say, and this will impress you, they say that he was able to sit and write in Greek with his left hand at the same time he could write with his right hand in Latin. Now, can you imagine being able to do something like that? I mean, talking about being ambidextrous, not only ambidextrous, he's multilingual. How many people would even do Greek and Latin normally anyway? That's impressive, isn't it? Because I mean, what you're talking about here is not only the eye and hand coordination and all that, but he has to be able to think two things at the same time. Because what he wrote made sense. How many people here are left-handed? Raise your hand. Now, how come you raise your right hand when you're left-handed? My point is this, is left-handed people are forced to live in a right-handed world because the vast majority of people are righties, not lefties, right? Or left. We have a token lefty in our family. His name is Stephen. And he's been forced to do all kinds of things with his right hand that other people would do with his left hand. He learned how to play guitar. He plays it like he plays a right-hand guitar, and you know, and just all kinds of stuff. And reality is this, is lefties must in fact adapt themselves to a righty world. But he's our token lefty, Stephen. Why is he left-handed? Who knows? We do know Stephen is very different, right? If you know Stephen, you know that's true. I know a guy when I was in school, his name was Mark Crawl, and I hadn't thought about him in years, but he was a left-handed guy, and he played guitar, but what he did was he played a right-hand guitar upside down. I think, again, the point Jesus is trying to make here is don't be impressed with yourself. Be careful not to be impressed with yourself. Have you ever thought something like this? Boy, the Lord is really, really, really going to love me for this one. I made some real sacrifices in order to do this particular thing for Him. He's going to be really impressed with me. And it's easy for us to impress ourselves.
something I used to be very good at, and I probably still am a lot better at now than I have any sense of it. My conversion was likened to some people as a conversion very similar to the Apostle Paul, which I don't see at all, okay? But people have said that to me. My best friend, when I became one of my best friends, when I became a believer, he told me, he said, "You're the last person, I talked to you, I prayed for you, I witnessed to you, but you're the last person on the face of the planet I ever thought would become a Christian." Well, one of the things I did early on as a believer, and actually when I first committed to do it, I wasn't a believer. I was going to church, but I wasn't a believer. But there was a missionary that came that was recruiting people to go to Africa that summer, to go to Uganda that summer, and I'm thinking, gosh, what a cool thing to do. See, Laurie and I talked about it, and we decided we were going to just start on the pathway. We knew this would never happen. Something like that's not going to happen in our life. There are too many things that are going to stand in the way. But we threw our name in the pot, thinking it's not going to go anywhere. I'll never forget my conversation with my boss, because for me to do what I wanted to do meant for me to take my 2 weeks vacation plus 2 weeks of leave, unpaid leave. And we were right in the middle of a major project, and I'm thinking, there is no way he's going to even think, he's going to laugh me out of his office. I'll never forget the day I sat there and told him what I wanted to do, and he looked at me and said, "That's wonderful, I'm all for it." Called my bluff. I impressed myself, guys, because of this. Because I was willing to do something that all of these other people around me that had been believers a lot longer than I had, because I did become a believer between the time I committed and the time I actually went. There was a lady, I'll never forget this, when Lori and I went, we came back. There was a lady that said this to me one day. She said, "I could never do something like that." That lady had been a believer for her whole lifetime, and she was probably 70 years old, and her husband was a retired pastor. Now, you think putting it in that context didn't cause me to be impressed with myself? I'm willing to do something that all of these diehard Christians that have been in the faith for decades are not willing to do. That must mean I'm really extra special. And what about this one? What about giving up a very lucrative, money-making job in nuclear power to become a pastor? Now, you think that doesn't impress me? What is it that you've done that's impressed yourself? There's stuff there. I know there is. Crazy, because you and I, as far as people knowing us, we really, in some ways, we're blinded to the reality of who we are. I need to understand that. But there are a lot of ways we really do know ourselves better than other people know us. And reality is this, is we don't tend to do much of anything that doesn't benefit us in some way. I mean, there are times, I guess, when we do, but you need to understand, because of our psyche, that there's never a time when we absolutely do anything for perfectly, absolutely the right reasons. There's always some messy stuff that's mixed in there with it. It's like there has to be some degree of self-benefit in everything that we do. How many times have you said something like this? Well, somebody's praising you for something you did. You know, you gave some money to somebody, or you helped some widow do this, that, or the other, and it was just one of those real heart-wrenching kind of things, and you were right in the middle of it, and someone started praising you for it, and you said something like this, well, it really felt good to me to do something good for somebody else. What do you think about that? We ever guilty of that? Our whole reason for doing things sometimes has to do with what it does for us. It makes me feel good. Houston, we have a problem. The problem is this is even though we don't see everything, we don't understand all of it, there's somebody who does. He sees everything. He hears everything. He knows absolutely everything. Nothing at all is hidden from him. Let me tell you, that's a scary place to be when you realize that. That word that popped out of my mouth against that person yesterday, the thought that just went through my head. God saw it. He knew it. He knows it. And the thing about it is he not only hears what we say, not only sees what we do, but he always knows perfectly every motivation for why we do what we do. We need to be careful not to fall into the trap of believing that when we do something nice and good, God owes us. He owes us some kind of reward because I just helped some old lady across the street. It's easy for us to fall in that trap, right? We've all fallen into it more times than we care to admit. I mean, after all, Jesus does say things like this, "Behold, I'm coming quickly. My reward is with me to render to every man according to what he has done." Houston, we have another problem. Our motives are always unknowable. To some degree. One of the big messages of the Sermon on the Mount, my friends, over and again, is this. It's not an edict to do this, that, and the other to earn God's favor, to impress God's favor. He's not saying be salt so you can impress God, be light so you can impress God. What he's saying is this, is you be salt and light because of who you are, not because of what you do. We were talking about Eli the priest in Sunday school this morning. The story has to do with Samuel, and God's has already decided he's going to take the priesthood away from Eli and his family because his two sons are very wicked. They're priests and they're very wicked and evil people. And he's going to replace that with Samuel. Samuel's going to become the priest and the prophet. But all of this is revealed to Eli, and I love the words of Eli when he hears what God, when Samuel tells him what God told him. He says this, he says, it is the Lord, let him do what seems good to him. Do you understand that we need to have that mentality in regard to things like heavenly rewards? That if God wants to do that, then that's his business. But if he doesn't, that's okay too. Unfortunately, there have been a lot of people who have studied the Sermon on the Mount through the years, and I don't believe they understood one bit of what Jesus was teaching. Because what they would say is this, is if you just took the Sermon on the Mount as the only teaching of Jesus, you would think Jesus was a legalist.
Because it's all about doing this, all about doing that. But let me tell you, if we believe that for a minute, then we don't know Jesus at all. Because Jesus came for a lot of reasons, and one of those is to strike down legalism in every form it exists. To show us, each one of us, every one of us, just how desperately we need Jesus and as much of Jesus as we can possibly have of Him, not only at the time of our conversion, but with every breath that we take for all of eternity. The eternal Son of God, who created everything that you see around you, this world and this universe, created it by His Word. That being came into this world, took upon Himself the flesh of a man, and lived a very difficult, torturous life. For sinners like us, to save us, to save me. If we want to be impressed with anything, maybe it ought to be that.